Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Rolly Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Rolly Romero versus Teofimo Lopez, August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Let me just very quickly here check and see if there's an update over at STL Today. My friends at, they did a story. Look at that. I'm impressed. They just cleared the story about what happened at Shrewsbury Sky Zone. And let's see how they covered this here. Hundreds of kids mob 6-7 day at Shrewsbury Sky Zone sparked several fights. Fights broke out at the Sky Zone here on Sunday after hundreds of juveniles. Let me just tell you real quickly here. They were not white juveniles, all right? That's left out of the mix here. Crowded outside of a business for a 6-7 day event. Shrewsbury police responded to Sky Zone around 3:42 p.m. where 300 to 350 unaccompanied juveniles, not white juveniles, were waiting in line outside the indoor trampoline park. So they say that the crowd of 10 to 17-year-olds broke out. I read you the news release on this. There was literally, this is what happened. There was a 12-year-old kid from Florissant in North County that jumped in an Uber and grabbed a knife because she saw the fights on social media and she wanted to be part of the fights. That's awesome, right? Now, I'm going to look here, and I don't think there's any race that's mentioned. And you know damn well that if it was a bunch of white kids from Chesterfield or Baldwin that were involved in this, oh, my God, we'd have stories everywhere about that. And we'd identify those kids as white troublemakers, right? No one wants to mention the race here. No one wants to be honest. I had a very interesting reaction and interaction on the internet. Because I posted the Shrewsbury news release and I said, gosh, I wonder what particular demographic was involved in the complete takeover of Sky Zone. They went into the Walmart, into the Aldi. They started throwing things at police. So somebody on Twitter said, I'm not one who believes in avoiding relevant information for the sake of being PC, but your post, pointing to me, has no redeeming value to the issue. It's purely to incite racial animosity and only appeals to the bottom feeders of the internet. Well, I posted the video of all the white kids, of which I don't see very many at all, and I said, damn white kids everywhere. I'm sure it's Baldwin and Chesterfield. The redeeming value for this idiot who responded to me on the internet is telling the effing truth. If you're not smart enough to realize how much this would be covered if the races were reversed, I cannot help you. This was a mob, it was out of control, and no one wants to tell the truth about it. Where the hell are the parents? Where's the parent of the 12-year-old kid that grabbed a knife and jumped into an Uber? It's outrageous that this is happening. And Sky Zone has to accept some responsibility because they threw this 6-7 event and they didn't get any added security. And it's 90 degrees. So what? It's summer. That's cited, though. It's hot summer, trouble, ripe for trouble. No, there's something there that's ripe for trouble, and I think we all know what it is. I'm so sorry, John Ziegler. I had to get that off my chest. I know you're usually the one that's yelling at my listeners, not me. How are you this afternoon?
I'm all right, Mark. I totally understand your anger over that. I mean, we have to be very wary of these Asian and Jewish kids causing problems.
Dude, this is a Sky Zone that my daughter goes to sometimes twice a week. I mean, this is
How did you not laugh at that, Mark? How did you not laugh at what I just said?
No, I know. I heard you. Believe me. But I'm pissed about it all. And I get what your point is. And that's kind of the point that I'm trying to make because it's ridiculous. All right. So I did not make the mistake. You're going to be impressed with me, John, because I learned from you over the years. We've known each other. I did not make the mistake the last few weeks as there was a lot of effort to prop up Spencer Pratt as someone who could legitimately win this race in L.A. But I remember my friend John Ziegler told me that that ain't going to happen. And in fact, that didn't happen. Now you have allegations of cheating, etc. Admittedly, this thing that you do in California, the way you vote, is just crazy. But how would you, before we get to the governor's race, how would you just analyze what happened with the numbers coming in for this other progressive?
Well, this has become a very complex situation that I somehow become embroiled in. In fact, I'm currently booked to be a live guest on CNN to discuss this tonight, which will be very, very interesting, assuming that that happens. I am...
Well, that is interesting.
I'm the only conservative in America who was outspoken in saying that it is crazy to even consider that Spencer Pratt could possibly be the next mayor of Los Angeles. I believe that MAGA influencers on X got duped and or were grifting and created a false momentum, an astroturfing for a campaign that never had any chance. People didn't understand basic math. That's how this began, Mark. People don't understand basic math. If a post on X gets 5 million impressions, that means that statistically only a couple of maybe 10 to 20,000 of them were actual voters in the Los Angeles primary, because that's just the small percentage of Los Angeles voters in the context of the entire country. Not to mention that there is a massive, like 7-to-1 Democrat to Republican advantage in the city of Los Angeles. Not to mention that we already went through a situation in 2022 where we had the perfect alternative candidate, a guy by the name of Rick Caruso, former Republican Democrat, yeah, with lots of experience, tons of money, made himself a household name, spending tens and tens of millions of dollars.
And still lost.
He made the runoff and lost by 10 points to a non-incumbent. And before she became Mayor Karen Bass. So there was never any chance that this was going to happen. But now, instead of admitting that they were duped or they were grifting or they were dumb and they're just a bunch of MAGA morons who bought into a false narrative, now we have to face save. And we have to come up and concoct a theory that, no, if it hadn't been for corruption and voter rigging, then Spencer Pratt would have at least made the runoff and probably would have won the whole thing on his own, which there's no evidence for. There's no logic for. President Trump has thrown gasoline on this fire because it helps his own narrative that every time he loses, it's actually rigged. And the reality is I'm in this, this one person on an island, the only conservative, saying, can we please care about facts and logic and be consistent and understand the basics of politics, understand the basics of math? But we're not living in that world anywhere.
Mark. Well, we've been away from that. Look, I'm not a stolen election person in any way, shape or form. Having said that, I know that there's fraud. And you even admit, look, you're shouting from the rooftops. You hate the way that this universal mail-in balloting takes place in California, but that doesn't mean it's rigged, right?
Mark, thank you for mentioning that, because that's what's so strange for me to be in this position. There is literally nobody in California who hates Gavin Newsom more than I do, who hates universal mail-in balloting more than I do. It is inherently vulnerable to minor fraud. And when I say fraud, I mean, like, you cannot tell me that elderly and newly dead people don't have their younger relatives come in and steal their votes and cast the ballots for them when they're just hanging around the house. That has to happen. But I don't believe that that's evidence of widespread, election rigging or stealing or fraud. It's on the margins. I hate it. I can't stand it. But there is the idea that there was even any logic for this is completely outside the realm of rationality, because Karen Bass, the mayor, the current incumbent mayor, the head of the Democratic establishment in Los Angeles, desperately needed Spencer Pratt to be in this runoff. Mark, I think she's going to lose in November.
Well, that was going to be my next question. So, who is this other person? Because I don't know much about her.
Nithya Raman.
Okay.
And so she comes. She's a city councilwoman. She's a socialist. She's Mamdani 2.0, which is what happened here. In the last moments of this campaign, a lot of younger Democrats looked around and go, wait a minute, we got Karen Bass, the fires. She's not, we don't really like her. And it's Spencer Pratt. Isn't there any other sort of option? And this, she happens to be Indian. She's attractive. She's a city councilwoman. She's super progressive. There was an LA Times poll that indicated she was beating Pratt and almost beating Bass, losing by 1 point in the last week of the campaign. And all of a sudden, all these people that were waiting to figure out who they were going to vote for hadn't cast their ballots yet, because we got a gubernatorial race that was very muddied. And so all of a sudden, at the very end, they all voted for Raman. And now I think Bass is cooked.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. So that means it's worse for LA, right? Just when you thought things couldn't get worse, they will get worse.
It's actually going to get worse for all of us, because if you follow this, Mark, here's the scenario that's most likely from here. Again, there's some ifs in this, but Rahman, if I'm right, is now going to be the new Bondani. The media is going to fall in love with her. All the younger people in L.A. are going to be able to claim that they're in favor of accountability for the wildfires. They're going to get rid of Bass. They're going to put the Mondani 2.0 in. She's mayor during the Olympics. She's a national celebrity. And in 2034, she's the heavy favorite to be the gubernatorial candidate for California. She's the second most important or powerful person in the country. When if Spencer Pratt hadn't won, no one would have ever heard of her.
Well, that's probably true. All right, now, this is where I'm worried about the next question. This is my political observation from the middle of the country here, all right? It seems like Steve Hilton's story might be just a little different, that he does have a chance, or are you going to tell me I'm stupid, he has no chance?
Well, first of all, the fact that Steve Hilton is apparently going to make the runoff it completely destroys the entire election rigging.
Well, I agree with you on that, yes.
Scenario. So how is it they let Steve Hilton get through?
I know.
How did Steve Hilton?
John, stop.
Steve Hilton,
don't use logic. Don't use logic.
Commentator. Mark, this is important. How did a Fox News commentator beat a guy who spent $200 million of his own money, who's a very progressive socialist liberal, who every media outlet in the state desperately needed to win because he's going to keep spending his own money on the race? How did that happen if the election was rigged?
Yeah, again,
how did that happen?
You can't use logic. You cannot use logic
okay,
with people.
But to answer your question, I'm never going to say you're stupid, Mark, because you're a very smart guy. But there is zero chance.
Really?
Zero. Less than Spencer Pratt chance of Steve Hilton winning a statewide election against Javier Becerra. Zero. Becerra could die and Hilton would not win.
Oh, my God. I lost some money because of this, because I placed some wagers with my roundtable panel. I got 3-1 odds, but it sounds like I'm going to lose a couple hundred bucks. I'm going to hold out hope. At least I didn't bet on Spencer Pratt.
Winning the entire state?
I said there's a chance, and we were talking, and I said I think that he's tapped into something. So, look.
Tapped into what?
I told you were going to tell me I was stupid. So, look, I admitted it, right?
Thank you for acknowledging temporary insanity.
Yes, John, if nothing, I'm self-aware, okay?
I appreciate that very much.
I realize that. So should Donald Trump be going to the Knicks game tonight?
I actually don't think so. It's very unusual for me to be agreeing with Stephen A. Smith, but I think it's selfish. It's narcissistic.
Yeah.
A basketball arena is a very different animal than a football arena. And I just think it's disruptive, and I don't understand it. I don't get it.
Well, I mean, to a certain extent, I give him a little bit of credit because he does know sports, and you know, he knows the history of the Knicks, and he was a Knicks fan.
He knows sports better than he understands politics.
Well, okay, we might be able to say that. And on that front, so you know, because I've really been pushing back on a lot. He doesn't seem, you know, a week ago today calls BB crazy. There's, you know, rockets that get fired out of Iran. Lebanon gets hit by Israel. There's no military response by the U.S. And I guess he's still holding out hope that there's going to be some sort of deal. I just, John, I mean, I know I'm naive on California. I just don't see a deal being made with this regime in any way, shape, or form that ends this in a way that they hand over the enriched uranium.
I think you're right, because I think there's been a fundamental miscalculation. And that is, I think Trump thought, or somebody around him thought, that the Iranians were rational actors. They're not. They're not rational actors. They have a superpower. Their superpower is called, they don't give a damn.
Yeah.
They do not give a damn about the things that we care about. And you cannot deal with people like that in rational terms. And so we are going to win every battle, and we're going to lose this war. It's just a matter of how badly and when.
Are you finding that, because I'm seeing a bit of a pattern, do you see more of the conservative pundits kind of coming out against this at this point? Because I think there's a bit of an evolution happening right now.
Well, I was actually in favor of this at the beginning. You know, because I'm of the belief that Iran should not be allowed to have a nuclear weapon. I'm actually amazed that Donald Trump has chosen that hill to at least politically somewhat die on, and I'm fine with that if that was the goal of this. But I think that it was not properly thought through, and I think the smarter move would have been to delay the process of them getting a nuclear weapon and not completely disrupt your entire administration or in the international economy for very little gain. I think I was wrong. I had too much faith in people like Marco Rubio around President Trump that they would understand the reality here and they would think it through. This was not thought through.
I think Marco Rubio might understand the reality. I just don't think he can communicate it with the president. I'm very confused as far as what, you know, a lot of the reaction and some of the things that they're doing. By the way, one other thing, just because I noticed, and I'm trying to find this on your site right now, because I think I just retweeted it. We have a WNBA player, Breonna Turner, who's not going to put the USA 250 patch on her uniform, huh? Taking a stand because they weren't free 250 years ago. There's no progress on race relations. Jim Crow 2.0 or whatever, right? That's unbelievable.
It is literally unbelievable, but it's yet another indication of why the WNBA is never going to be a real league taken very seriously. It's unbelievable. It's incredibly sad when I'm pretty sure you remember the 200th anniversary, the bicentennial.
I do. I was 11 years old, the same age as my daughter. Yeah.
Wait, I remember it very well. Way before the presidency of Barack Obama, right?
Yes.
There was nowhere near. I realize we look at the past with rose-colored glasses. There was nowhere near that kind of level of disunity when it comes to the bicentennial as there is for the 250th.
And it's sad. I thought there'd be, you know, a little bit more here heading in, and they seemingly have kind of screwed up the concert. I think there's no way to describe that.
Kind of.
Yeah, I know. I'm being nice there. I really am. There was something else, John, that I was going to ask you about that I saw today, and I wasn't sure. Well, first of all, Clay Travis leaving OutKick. What do you know anything about that?
You know, I've asked people I know there, and I've not gotten a response. You know, Clay is somebody who's been greatly frustrating to me because, long story short, his boss is somebody I used to work with a long time ago, and I wanted to talk with Clay about a couple of issues, and he refuses to even get on the phone with me.
Really?
Afraid of me, I think. And I really don't think he's a very smart guy. He's actually longtime Democrat. People don't seem to understand that. And his voting history is very Democratic. And he's wrong a lot. He was wrong about Spencer Pratt, among other things. But, you know, I guess he's going to be a Fox News contributor now. So, you know, more power to him.
Yeah. Well, I thought he already was a Fox News contributor. Yeah, That's where I was a little confused.
Again, I agree with you. I had the same instinct. There's something that we're missing from this story, and I haven't found out what that is yet.
How was your golf tournament last week? You did okay?
Mediocre at best.
Oh, come on. Step it up, Zig. Step it up.
74-76, 11th place. Not very good.
Well, you combine those two scores, you basically will have what I'll shoot at Belrive a week from tomorrow, probably about 150, the way the rough has grown out there for the BMW Championship. Zig, always great to have you on. Thank you. We'll talk soon. All right, we'll see you.
Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Rolly Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Rolly Romero versus Teofimo Lopez, August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
All right, I made a little technical error, though. Back on track. We are going to talk with John Seiler coming up here. He's the director of higher education policy and a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. And this is great timing. First of all, John's been a guest many times on the show, blowing up a lot of this DEI stuff out there. He's been a leader on that for the last few years. I think we've known each other now for 4 years. He's been a guest. But there is a new report that just dropped today from Vanderbilt and Washington University from right here in St. Louis that is about bias in the humanities and social sciences. And it's very interesting. They admit a lot. Of course, they try to cover their tracks a lot, too. But John's going to have the very latest on that coming up here at 5:32. We'll have audio cut of the day. I want to play a little bit of Trump here on Meet the Press. But before I do, props out there to some of the folks on social media that have been having fun with this move by the Chicago Bears to Hammond, Indiana, which I still I just think I'm missing something, or maybe this is just this huge negotiating ploy. I'm not a Bears fan. I don't really care about the Bears in particular, but my family up there in the north suburbs, they're all Bears fans, unfortunately. And I mean, I was mapping this the other day. It was Friday afternoon, right around showtime. And I said, how long would it take to get from Arlington Heights, Illinois, where my family lives, to Hammond, Indiana? And at that time on Friday, it was 2.5 hours with traffic. Even from Soldier Field, I think they said it's like 24 miles from where the current Soldier Field is right now. So why you would do that to your fans from the north suburbs, the northwest suburbs, really any areas unless you're in Indiana or south, I don't know. But a lot of people have been having trouble, or not trouble, but mocking this, having fun with memes, etc. And one of my favorites came from somebody just known as @Tomco_1 on the X, formerly Twitter, that said, breaking, Italian Beef has announced its intentions to relocate from Chicago to Indianapolis, Indiana. A Chicago staple since the Great Depression, Italian Beef cited high crime, corruption, and an overall unfriendly business climate as its reasons for leaving Chicago. I thought that was really good. By the way, I do like a good Italian beef. Sorelli's is the place that we always go to in Chicago. My mom and dad would bring them down here for years, and we do love a little Chicago Italian beef. All right, there's Trump on Meet the Press. Not sure why he would do this with Kristen Welker, but it never seems to end well. But he was doing an event in Wisconsin, so they actually came to him, and it did not end well. So he was talking about California. We were just talking about that with Zig a few minutes ago. He's insistent upon this being rigged.
Listen to me.
Let's talk
There's
about
tremendous
Todd
evidence. There's nothing
well, it's
but
not
evidence.
Been presented
the election
in a
was
court
rigged.
Of law.
It was a dirty election.
Mr.
And
President,
it's happening again right now in
never
California.
Presented
it's
evidence
happening
the
right now in California.
Rigged.
Right now, it's look at what's
Where's
happening
the
in California.
To that?
It's
the
four
Republicans
days
are doing well
in
California.
So that's part of the point there. Like, Steve, if the California was this was rigged against Spencer Pratt, then, you know, to John's point and to my point now, and to I think Kristen Welker's point, although I'm uncomfortable taking her side, why would Steve Hilton be doing particularly well? Why wouldn't they take him out as well? It doesn't make sense.
It's no, they're not. They're dropping fast because it's a rigged election. Let me tell you, it's 4 days. And they aren't even close
well,
to coming
they,
up
that's
with
how they count
it. You know
the
why they're doing
California.
That? Because they're cheating on the election.
There's what? Do you have evidence they're, to support
all
that?
All I have to do is look. All well, I have to do is
that's
look.
That's not evidence.
And I listen to people, but, and let's see what happens.
But, sir, that's not evidence.
Do you think it's appropriate?
That's how they that count they the votes in
Do you
California?
Think it's appropriate that they have an election, and 5 days later, they're nowhere close to picking
State
a winner?
State and local officials acknowledge they are slow.
Look, there's one thing that we should all be able to agree on, no matter what party or race or stripe or anything like that. What they do in California is a joke. It's a mess. Even John admitted that earlier this hour, that it's outrageous, this mail-in process that they have, which allows you to basically date the ballot, you know, the day of the election or maybe even the day of. I have very little doubt that there's some malfeasance. There's going to be some fraud that's going to take place. We know that that happens. But the president's frustrated because all these votes are coming in and being counted. And look, we went from a situation last Wednesday where you had 60% of the vote counted, and then to Thursday where there was 62% of the vote, and then Friday, 65%. It's ridiculous that in our biggest state, they can't count ballots. And does that mean it's fraudulent? It doesn't. But would it lead people perhaps in that path to maybe believe President Trump or others and say, hey, what's going on here? So anyway, he's talking with Kristen Welker about this. Now, I don't know even what happened before this, but it did not end well. He walks out.
Your elections are crooked, and you're crooked, and Meet the Press is crooked, and so is ABC. And CBS and CNN.
But, Mr. President,
your one-sided crooked networks. All right, let's call it quits because I've had enough. Thank you, darling. Have a good time.
Mr. President, let's please. I traveled all the way to Wisconsin.
Well, he's out.
I traveled
in the rain with you.
He's going.
I sat in the rain with you for an hour, on and off in the rain, and I've given you enough time. You ought to straighten out your press because you know what?
Mr. President,
a country can never be great with a dishonest press.
Listen, we traveled all the way to Wisconsin for this interview.
Well, that didn't go well. And I don't, a couple things there. Meet the Press is getting what they want. They come on, Kristen Welker, you know that that's the kind of, you know, attention that I'm sure you want. But the other part is, how does Trump sit down with Kristen Welker and think in any world that that's going to go well? given her history and her journalistic malpractice. I think that was an error on his
part. Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Rolly Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Rolly Romero versus Teofimo Lopez. August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
Part. All right, John Seiler is back with us this afternoon. He's the director of higher education policy and a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. And really, really good timing here because we're going to talk about some things that happened with the American Sociological Association and what they're saying about sociology courses. But what happened here is there's a new report that was dropped from Vanderbilt and Wash U about, you know, political bias in the humanities and social sciences. Very, very interesting. John, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
First and foremost, like, who did this? Who commissioned this report that kind of came out today?
Yeah, so it's a really interesting development. So Wash U and Vanderbilt jointly commissioned a report, basically asking a very distinguished committee of academics from across the country. This was by no means a conservative
right.
committee to write a report just addressing this question of whether the humanities and the social sciences were in some ways becoming degraded by a couple of different issues, mostly whether they're being degraded by politicization. And so the presidents of Vanderbilt and Wash U asked this group to review a large amount of scholarship, and they did, and they came back with this report, which, you know, if you compare it to other reports that have come out recently, Yale University just produced a similar report. It's an extremely strong statement about what's going wrong in higher education right now, which makes it really interesting.
Yeah, one of the lines is, if the pursuit of disinterested inquiry is compromised, it strikes at the very foundation on which a university should be based, just as the corrupt administration of justice strikes as the foundation of what a system of justice should be based. Now, you and I, John, have been talking about this for a long time. You've been, you know, just an absolute rock star in exposing a lot of this across the country. Are you surprised by this? I mean, they actually were honest about what they saw, and they're exposing this in this report.
Well, in one sense, it is a surprising and very welcome development. In another way, there's an interesting battle going on right now amongst leaders of elite universities. And it is no surprise to me, actually, to see Vanderbilt and Wash U take the side of the reformers. Now, that's not to say that they're reforming in every way. They are certainly... and this report shows it, trying to distance themselves from what they would probably describe as the conservative attacks on higher education.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if you read, for instance, and look at what Daniel Diermeier, the president of Vanderbilt, has been saying for a long time, they are expressing real concerns that higher education basically has a kind of scholar activist problem where
yes.
not all scholars, but some scholars are using their scholarship simply as a tool to advance political causes. And now the report is very academic and includes all sorts of qualifiers and, you know, personally, I think they're probably trying to say, no, we're not conservative. Don't call us conservative. But at the end of the day, they absolutely affirm that basic assessment that a certain group within higher education, a certain group of scholars are distorting their scholarship by putting political goals at the forefront and, importantly, by arguing that there's no such thing as non-ideological truth or non-ideological objectivity. And so really it's all ideological and you should just embrace that and embrace that what you're doing is a kind of ideological project, which they say this is a disaster. for higher education.
So, John, in the introduction of the report, and look, I'll be honest, I haven't read through all the, you know, the meat here, and you've done that, and you've done a lot of great, you know, stuff on the X formerly Twitter today, kind of exposing some of this with screen captures, et cetera. But one thing in the open they say, and just want your opinion on this, is they say, in our view, and this is in italics, right, they want you to kind of take this as important, in our view, nothing in this report warrants any intervention more intrusive than such first steps. What does that even mean?
Right. And so, again, right now, everyone in mainstream institutions, a vast majority of professors, even if they think there's a problem, they're still very afraid that their independence is going to be overrun by a state government or by the federal government. And so I think they want to make the case to their colleagues that No. We're not trying to be a tool for the Trump administration or anyone else doing engaged in a political project. What we want to do is just say what's going on and take that first step. Now, I imagine there are some people within academia who would say that so as to stop any further action. But at the same time, I think what's interesting about the argument that they make is they actually say that there is a time when action has to be taken that actually defies the experts. So what they argue is that, yeah, university administrators, listen, if you're a university president, you have no idea what the best astronomy looks like, because you're inevitably not going to be, an expert in every discipline. You have to rely on the experts. But then there's this problem that sometimes the feedback loops don't work and the experts become kind of unmoored from reality, or at least that's possible. And they're saying that is possible. And when that happens, you actually have to have some sort of tool for feedback. And they say, we don't want this to go beyond we don't want anything dramatic to happen, but they are allowing for the fact that maybe other scholars should come in and review what's going on at mm-hmm. particular universities. They are opening the door to serious feedback. And I think somebody, some courageous leader might, in the university context, might be able to take advantage of that and say, okay, we're actually going to follow up. It'll be worth seeing what Vanderbilt and WashU actually do years down the line based on this report.
Yeah, because they have all these, it seems like they have a lot of caveats, right? So, and they outline some of this, like the problem is not that scholars in these areas are significantly more liberal or progressive than the general public. I find a hard time believing that, right?
Right. And, you know, in one way, I think my biggest critique of this report is that they essentially identify a serious problem. They identify the problem of relativism. They say that, well, some people think there's no objective truth, there are no objective standards, so all standards can be, every claim about knowledge or claim that some kind of evidence is worth listening to, that is an ideological stance. There's nothing that's not ideological. And so, you can always make the argument that really what you're doing is you are engaging in cis heteropatriarchal reasoning.
Yes, exactly.
I agree with them. That is bad. That does spell the destruction of higher education. And they, in fact, use really, really strong language to condemn that kind of scholarship. But I think they don't go far enough in saying that there are actually more mundane distortions of scholarship. And the fact that higher education has become so uniformly left or even far left, that scholarship across the board, and there's great data on this, has become uniformly left and increasingly so, I don't think they quite take seriously the fact that that is a sign that there's a problem, and that might actually contribute to the underlying problem that they're trying to get to the bottom of in the first place. They want to bracket that off. It makes sense that they tried to do that. I think you could make the report even stronger by trying to tackle that issue.
Yeah, I mean, look, they close it with some, I think, very strong language. They go and they kind of outlined a bunch of the different reasons throughout the paper. It says, for these reasons, we regard the failings that we have pointed out as so serious. They're not mere problems in the administration or operation of the university, but they strike at the very heart and soul of what a university should be for. And I agree with that, and I think you do as well. And one of the reasons you've been on this mission for a while. So who do you think chews on this and digs into it and thinks about it? Because it's language. lengthy? You know, you've done it. Will other universities absorb this, other leaders in academia, and take it seriously, you think?
Well, listen, every university is its own little political ecosystem. It has its own set of factions. And any document like that can be used as sort of a point of reference for people trying to get things done. And so I think that there are, we know that there's a faction within every university right now of hardcore scholar activists who will absolutely reject it. There's also a faction of hardcore reformers at most universities. That's a small group, but there are serious people in a lot of universities who want to reform things, who can equally make, you know, real efforts to make changes, and they can petition their leaders to make changes. And some of them might actually be in positions of leadership. And I think if you have a statement from credible scholars saying, yes, sometimes disciplines get so distorted that they actually need outside intervention, and that is a worthwhile thing and actually important thing to pursue. If you have somebody, some statement, an argument for that position, you can get somewhere with that. I firmly believe that you can. And again, I think this is a good, I think this gives us good reason to believe that, you know, WashU and Vanderbilt are the ones to watch. And I would love to see a follow-up from both of those institutions.
Me too.
On what they are doing.
We'll see if we can get that. And I'll see if I can put some pressure on too. John Seiler, always great to have you on, John. Thanks for all this work. And man, good timeliness here, booking you on a Monday. I'll give credit to my executive producer, Fred. We'll talk soon. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
It really is a fascinating little, self-examination or autopsy. I guess that's what they called it when the Democrats came out with their deal a couple of weeks ago. But then the follow-up, as we kind of pointed out at the end there, is what will happen as a result of this. It was a little bit more, when I read through some of this, a little bit more honest on the issue of bias than I expected, although then they try to cover their tracks many, many times as well. But at least credit for trying and really putting something out there for people to chew on, at least. All right, Sue's off today. I think she'll be back tomorrow afternoon. I got a couple things that I want to do in this segment.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
All right, couple different parts here. This would be called, we call this in the news business, Nat Sound or Natural Sound. That is outside of a Walmart and a Sky Zone location in Shrewsbury on Watson Road, where a mob of kids got out of control. So here's the news release, and I read some of this earlier. There's a response from Sky Zone as well. This is a Sky Zone that my daughter goes to sometimes a couple of times a week. On Sunday, June 7th, 2026, at approximately 3:42, this was in the afternoon, Shrewsbury police were dispatched to Sky Zone, located at 7375 Watson Road, in reference to a disturbance involving a large number of juveniles. Upon arrival, officers learned that Sky Zone was hosting a 6-7 event and had not arranged for additional security despite the anticipated large crowd. With the businesses already full, there were approximately 300 to 350 unaccompanied juveniles waiting in line outside. With temperatures around 90 degrees, it did not take long for tempers to flare. Approximately 8 fights broke out in a matter of minutes. As officers arrived, the crowd scattered in all directions. We requested assistance from other agencies. So what happened is these kids go to Aldi, Walmart, and a store called My Place. They enter the store. They damage the stores. They threaten customers and employees. They threw rocks at the cops. They essentially shut down those businesses for the rest of the day. Here's something from the news release. A butcher knife was seized from a 12-year-old who said that she Ubered to the area from Florissant after she saw the fights on social media and wanted to be involved, so she brought the weapon with her for, quote, her protection. They didn't clear this area until 9:30 last night. Now, I'd like to know, the one thing that I don't know is how many arrests were made in connection with this. Here's what Sky Zone says. At Sky Zone Parks, the safety and well-being of guests, team members, and the communities they serve are always the highest priority. On Sunday, June 7th, the independently owned and operated Sky Zone franchise park in Shrewsbury, Missouri, strictly enforced its maximum capacity limits during a scheduled promotion. While the park safely managed operations inside, a crowd gathered outside after being denied entry. Local law enforcement responded to manage the external crowd and ensured public safety. The Shrewsbury location is grateful for the swift response of local authorities. There's blame to be put on this, ladies and gentlemen. It does not belong on Sky Zone. It does not belong on the Shrewsbury Police Department or anyone else in law enforcement. It belongs to the parents of these kids who are not from Baldwin, who are not from Chesterfield. I have to dance around the racial issue, right? Because then you'll get in trouble. But I call it like I see it. And I've seen videos. And this was not a bunch of white kids, okay? So take that for what it is. Am I stoking the racial animosity? You be the judge of that. I'm just being honest about what happened here. And you have a kid that's barely older than my own daughter who jumps in an Uber with a knife because she sees fights on social media. That is a deep-seated cultural issue that Shrewsbury police, that Sky Zone, that I cannot help. It's the parents of these kids who don't want to parent. And it's these kids who are out of control. And I don't even know what to say about it. I mean, we're very lucky that there were not people hurt last night or more violence. And maybe the only thing that saved that is because it was in the, you know, the middle of the day and the sun didn't go down until after, you know, 8:30 or 9 o'clock. Unreal. This is unreal, too. Scott Pelley. Here's the second part of Audio Cut of the Day. Poor Scott Pelley. He didn't even see it coming. He went in, ripped his new boss, was disrespectful, was insubordinate. And gosh, he was a little, flummoxed by the fact that he was canned.
Me about that meeting, and if you were at that point going in expecting to be fired?
Oh, gosh. Furthest thing from my mind. It hadn't occurred to me.
But it really didn't occur to you that you could be fired after so many of your colleagues had been let go, after you'd had this, very contentious interaction with your new boss?
You know, some reporter I turned out to be. I just didn't connect the dots.
I mean, I'm going to simplify it for people. If Scott Pelley is not smart enough to realize that complete and total insubordination in front of his superiors was going to result in disciplinary action up to and including firing, then I don't think we should have trusted him with any journalism at CBS for all these decades. If he's that naive, if he's that ignorant. And this one, I haven't played this one yet. I can't even believe he said this. And you got to hear what he says and then what he says in the aftermath of it. And you'll say, he deserves even less credibility. So whatever credibility people might have thought Scott Pelley had in his journalistic career is gone. It ended a week ago. And then with comments like this to the New York Times, and listen to this one.
Well, if we want to talk about it at an emotional level, the best thing that I can imagine in terms of describing it is that it's like your spouse was murdered. I do want to be clear that I do not feel sorry for me. I don't care about me. I'm fine. I care about these people that I left behind.
Oh, my God. The arrogance of Scott. It's like a murdered spouse? No, Scott. There's a big difference between someone having their spouse shot in the head or taken away from them than in a guy who spent his entire career, at least the latter part of his career, practicing not journalism, but journalistic malpractice with bias and bias and more bias. We had Tiffany Justice on from Moms Against Liberty. You want to, example 101 is that story from 2 years ago. But there's countless interviews that he's done where he had the agenda hat on. That's the type of journalism that they want. Unfortunately, it's the type of journalism they're teaching at my alma mater in Columbia, Missouri. But to say that it's like a murdered spouse, I would hope sincerely that even some of the people who like Scott Pelley take a step back and say, good Lord, dude, get a life.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Raleigh Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Raleigh Romero versus Teofimo Lopez. August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.